We continue our series of conversations today on the history of uprisings by looking at an uprising in the United States that still causes debate and controversy today, a slave rebellion in Virginia on August 21st, 1831, which killed somewhere between 55 and 60 white people, including women and children. The rebellion was led by Nat Turner and has become known as the Nat Turner Rebellion. The backlash of the rebellion for blacks was even far worse and severe than what the rebellion meant for whites. Hundreds of blacks who weren't even involved in the rebellion were killed by whites. Virginia and other southern states responded by passing new laws prohibiting education of slaves and free blacks and restricting the rights of assembly. To talk about the Nat Turner Rebellion, I'm now joined by Michael Lange. He is a professor at San Jose State University. He is a playwright, an actor. Many people will know him as his role as Malcolm X throughout the Bay Area, and he has written a stage play about Nat Turner called Prophet Nat. Michael Lange, good to have you here.
Thank you.
You've researched Nat Turner and the rebellion. You visited Southampton County, Virginia, where this occurred. What is important to know about Southampton, 1831, and perhaps even today, to understand this story?
Well, it's a good question. Number one, they changed the name of the city. So it's now Cortland, Virginia. It was called Jerusalem, Virginia. Very important note. Nat Turner, I think, thought that the Jerusalem in the Bible was the Jerusalem in Virginia. So if his mindset says he was deeply engaged in the spirituality of himself, the religion, he memorized large segments of the Bible, particularly the issues around Jerusalem. How did he learn how to read? That's another good question. So he was able to pull this rebellion off, probably under the guise that he thought that he was doing God's work. When I visited what is now Cortland, Virginia, they kept the name of the main street. Jerusalem Platte Road is the name of it. So there was some evidence. Of course, there's the Fork and Barrels Road and all of that. There's the Blackhead Signpost Road where they impaled probably 30 or 40 heads on a post to let people know this is what happens when you rebel, shortly after the rebellion. So when I went to ask people about Nat Turner, they said, well, we don't know no Nat Turner.
They didn't. They don't.
They didn't. And so I said, well, this was 1831. They said, oh, that Nat Turner. So he's like, you had to qualify it with the year. And some of them were African-American people that I talked to, people who lived on Blackhead Signpost Road. Had no clue what the name of that road was and why it was named that. So that's the state of the state. They were very accommodating to me when I got there, too. I mean, they let me get into the, I guess, like the equivalent of a courtroom where they had all the records of all the trials that took place. They had them, you know, listed numerically by year. So I went to 1831 and took a look at August 21st as well as October 30th when he was captured, and then the trial records from November 5th through the 6th, and then his confessions. So they were very accommodating. They wanted to make sure, but I was, you know, an educator. They gave me some white gloves. I put those on and I held the death certificate of Nat Turner, the trial records, and then they took the lock off of the jail where they kept him because they built a new jail. But they decided to keep the lock. It's a huge thing. It's about 2 feet by a foot and a half, double bolted lock. And so I was able to hold that as well. So that's the big difference, is that they're not fully aware of who Nat was.
Let's go back to the name of the town, Jerusalem.
Yeah.
Nat Turner, from what I've read, believed that he was ordained for some great purpose of the hands of God.
Yes.
Religion's a very important part of this story.
Yeah, and at a very young age. He just about the time he was able to talk and communicate with people, he had immersed himself in stories from the Bible, told to him by his grandmother, pretty much. I think they think she had something to do with this. So he saw his entire childhood his young adult life, immersed himself in stories and the mysteries of the Bible, and received signs from God, he says, three specific signs from age 25 until he was 31 years of age.
What were those signs?
Atmospheric. There was an eclipse of between the Earth and the Moon at the time, and so it was fairly strange, and he looked at that and he asked God to give him a sign, and God sent him this sign a few days later. Another one was he saw a black dot go across the sun, and that was an earlier sign. And then the first sign is this, or the final sign was his this atmospheric change in the weather. People were talking about it. The slaves were talking about it because a lot of us, when we were slaves, are superstitious about these kinds of things. Something's up. Something's getting ready to happen. Hmm. And that took that sign as his final sign.
The rebellion was initially planned for the Independence Day, 4th of July.
Yes, but he got sick.
Yeah.
And he, for whatever reason, he's probably kind of a quirky thing. Some people celebrate the 4th of July. African Americans celebrate the 5th of July. And they just put an exclamation that we're not going to celebrate your holiday. We'll celebrate our holiday. But he chose that date probably because it was a well-known day. The country was, by that time, you go from 1776 to 1831, you know, so however many years, 60-some-odd years almost. So it was probably well-known. But he got deathly sick, and so he postponed his plan. Now, he had organized these other six gentlemen, and he was a preacher. I mean, Nat was so loved by white folk that they sent him around to these other plantations to preach to the slaves.
Tell me about his relationship to white people.
Well, they saw him as a humble, gentle spirit. Very forceful, though, when he was in a pulpit, for whatever reason. And I had to write what I would call, in the staged version, the last sermon. And I wanted to put everything in there, but I wanted to put the metaphors in there, because he couldn't say we're going to go out and have a rebellion.
The last sermon before the rebellion.
Yes, just before the rebellion. So he spoke, "Do you want to be free?" "Yes, we want to be free. God opened my eyes, and he showed me that we can be free one day. Are you with me?" "Yes, we're with you. God opened my ears, and I heard the voice of God. And he said, the first will be last, and the last will be first." So then finally he opens his mouth. "And God has told me to tell you, are you with me? We're going to be free." So that's what the people heard. They didn't say take life. Mm-hmm. Didn't say kill children. Didn't say kill women. Just, "You want to be free." So that was the banner under which Nat was telling these first six trusted companions. He called them the soldiers of the Lord. Hark, whose real name was Hercules, but they called him Hark. He's a big fella, you know, kind of muscular. But Nat's best friend from childhood, and then he organized the other people, and then they set up the meeting that happened, and then Nat laid out the final plan. But he didn't want anybody else to know. He felt that by the time he got to the plantation, took the life of the slave master, "You're free. You don't have a slave master anymore. Are you with me?" So that last sermon had to kind of, you know, dot, dot, dot. You jump to this, "Are you with me?" But not telling them the details. Mm-hmm. So his window of time, unlike V.C., Denmark, V.C. or Gabriel Prosser, was not 5 months or 6 months or a year. It was more within the period of the 4th of July until August.
How much do we know about the planning?
Oh, we know that they had a broad axe, a bottle of, what they call a great big jug of whiskey, in the usual place, which is where Cabin Pond is. It's a place behind the plantation. And the slaves were allowed to gather, particularly on Sundays. Mm-hmm. And they would have Sunday service of some type outdoors. They would have their little dancing and little things that they would do. This is the only day that they were getting off. So Cabin Pond, the planning, they met at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and by midnight they struck the first blow.
The first blow.
Mm-hmm.
Where was that, the first blow? Do we know who that was?
Yeah, there was the Francis Plantation, Hark's Plantation.
The significance of that?
That Nat had to deliver the first blow. That was the significance. That is, they prayed. They would wait until midnight. They would put a ladder up to the house. One person would crawl up, open the window, come downstairs, open the door. They would all go in. And they would, husband and wife, slave masters and his wife, were sleeping in bed. Nat would pray over them. And then he took his little, he had a little sword. But it was so dull that when he threw the first blow, it only woke up the slave master. That was it. And his last words were, wah, wah. And then Will, who also was from the Francis Plantation, dispatched him with the broad axe. So then they would get the weapons at that particular plantation, get the horses, get to the slaves, tell them they're free, and then move on to the next plantation.
How did the slaves respond? Did the slaves know that the slave owner was killed?
Nat told them.
Yeah.
But I remember one account that I researched is, so you're saying I'm a free man? Yes, you're free now. Well, I tell you what, Nat, you go right on down the road a little piece, and I'll be there. And he never showed up.
Mm-hmm.
So the type of slavery that was in Virginia, which is at the top of the South,
right,
was a little bit more agreeable to the slaves. That is, they could run away and escape, but if you give them a reason not to run away, but as you get further in the South, it became much more severe. So if you're in the deep South, you're not going to be running away. It's going to take you days or weeks or whatever it takes to get out. So the type of slavery, the evidence would probably surprise most of the inhabitants of Southampton County. We're nice to our slaves. Why would they take our life? Why would Nat Turner do this? And if you talk to the slaves, and there are slave narratives, they were on both ends of the spectrum. They loved what Nat did and were willing to ride with him. And then they said, oh, no, we got it too good here. So you had that ambivalence. But he did get, they said as many as 70. Herbert Aptheker did some research.
This is after starting off with six.
With six, yeah.
And by the time they went to, how many farms did they go to?
They went through about 12.
Uh-huh.
About 12. They were all in a neighborhood, but a huge neighborhood in terms of horseback. And so they would go maybe a mile and a half to the next one, and then another mile and a half to the next one. Maybe there's two plantations that are next to each other. So it took them from midnight, and it was about 40 hours later that it was quelled.
40 hours?
40. Yeah, the whole thing is over in 40 hours.
Did they kill everyone inside these 12
almost,
farms?
Almost. Some of the survival details, people hid. They knew, and the word went out. They had the alarm in the town of Jerusalem. Now, Jerusalem is the town about probably 5 miles away, and they're moving toward the town because there was an armory there, and if they made it to there, they could sustain themselves much longer. Yeah, it was... it was probably a dozen houses. Almost everyone was killed. And they talked in detail about two people that survived that wound up testifying.
Uh-huh.
And that's how they were able to convict them that they were part of the rebellion or the uprising.
Now, once the rebellion was quelled, many people who were participating in it were immediately apprehended, but Nat Turner was not.
Nope. No, this
he hid out.
This was the beauty of that story. If there's something to be beautiful about it, he said the hand of God was with him. on his escape. And so he lasted 67 days.
67 days.
Yeah, living in the earth. He dug a cave, a foxhole, put fence rails and branches and twigs, and he lived there probably 23 and a half hours out of every 24. He would come out to see if there was food that he could get, to see if there was any word that they were listening to. And I think the key is that they sent the vigilante groups started forming. Mm-hmm. Then you had the...
was this after, right after the 48
right
hours?
Right after, yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah, and they had a battle with him. And I'll tell you a little bit about that battle, because that broke the rebellion. But see, Nat Turner's men had seen so much gore and blood that they needed to go get a drink. And they knew that at this particular plantation, there was a smokehouse that had beef jerky in it and it had brandy. And so they said, well, Nat, we'll be right back. We need to, you know, because, you know, they had killed all these people. And so they got so drunk that by the time they rejoined Nat, the vigilante group is coming and they're having fire. Power. I mean, they're fighting, they're shooting at each other. And these guys, they didn't have anybody shooting at them.
They didn't have guns. They had
well, they had some, access. They had, they took the guns from the plantations. So
when
they
first began killing, they didn't. And I guess they didn't want to,
they didn't want
the loud noises to alert everybody.
Right, and they had broken hose and, you know, something to just to swing with. You know, they had the broad axe. But then they gained power as they went from plantation to plantation, including horses. So that was a dynamic that Nat just didn't have the, how do I say it? He didn't have the skill to lead his men.
Did he think he was going to get more than 70 men in doing this?
That's a good question. He was trying to free all of the slaves in America. Hey, there's no way he would even know that at that time, I think there were, I want to say between 3 and 4 million slaves. So how could he comprehend and embrace freeing them? He didn't take money. That was not his objective. He didn't burn down the homes. That wasn't his objective. His objective was to free all the slaves. God tells him to do this. So he thought that a divine intervention would happen from God, and it never came. So those 67 days in the stage play, we get to hear his thoughts. And then one of Nat Turner's men was never captured. No one, even to this day, knows what happened to Davy. From the Parker Plantation, a young 18-year-old.
Yeah, that's
kid.
Who you focus in.
That's
why,
yeah,
in
I tell
play.
The story through his eyes.
Yeah.
See?
And then there's also the backlash against just other.
That backlash
black
was about
people
200
in the area.
People. Yeah, 200 were summarily dismissed. I remember there was one slave master who asked the slave, are you a part of Nat Turner's rebellion? He was in a river at the time, I guess, either swimming or taking a bath or something. And he says, no, and if you don't believe me, you can shoot me right now. Slave master pulled his gun up and killed him right there on the spot. So it's the truth of whether or not I am in agreement with Nat Turner. That could get me killed.
Right.
As opposed to saying, oh, no, I'm not a part of that, and I don't believe in what he's doing. That might save my life.
Might.
It might. But the fact that they took those heads of all of those slaves and put them on poles and then lined the street with them tells you they weren't joking. This is in response. This has nothing to do with justice. This never showed up in a courtroom. This is the vigilantes taking their angst out on slaves simply because the act was done.
They beheaded slaves and put them on poles and lined them up.
Yeah.
Do we know how many?
Yeah, I think about 30 or 40 heads. It was pretty large. And it lined, and they named the road Black Head Signpost Road. That's a sign of the black heads to tell you you should not have an uprising. This is what happens to you. So it was a shock. It was the shot heard around the world when you see those heads. And Like I say, when I went to Virginia and talked to the people, I went three times, by the way, you know, they had no clue how that street got its name.
Still named that.
Still named that today. The last time I was there was 2001.
Who was Thomas Ruffin Gray?
He was a lawyer, and he had the assignment. I don't know how he finagled it, but he got, it's like the scoop. It's like, you know, Mitch gets the scoop. He gets to interview the great Banditti chief to find out the one question that all the Southerners had. Why would he do this?
He got to talk to Nat Turner.
Yes. You know, over a period of 2 days. And then he corroborated it with, he had attended legal proceedings earlier. So he knew the entire case backward and forward. So he could ask Nat a question. And Nat, he did ask. He said, well, do you not now find yourself mistaken?
Mm-hmm.
Nat says, was not Christ crucified?
Was not Christ crucified?
Yeah. Which means Nat's answering a question with a question. So this is my, this is how my life will go. I did God's work. And Christ has spoken to me, and I am in Christ or like Christ, and Christ got crucified, and I'm being now crucified. So it was interesting, and Herbert Aptheker said, you know, African-American people have an incredible dramatic history. This is a lot of drama in their history. And then he told me that story about Thomas Gray when he asked him the question, do you not now find yourself mistaken? And Nat responded with that. He says, so much drama. Wow.
What did Nat Turner say when he was asked why he did this? And what did he say was his goal?
Well, his last words were, I am ready. So he resolved something, and he was ready to meet his maker. His goal, again, was to free all of the slaves.
I read that he did save, or decided not to kill, some of the poor white people.
Yes. One person that was white, Ethel Brantley, had been stricken with these cutaneous eruptions, they called them. And that baptized him, but took him down to the river. And the man got well. And some of the whites were so poor that they were in the same state that he was in, close to slavery. So he didn't want to touch them. He wanted to hit the power economic structure. And so his wife's plantation, he never went to that. I guess he didn't think through, well, they're going to find out it's you, Nat, and then they're going to go and get her and your children. But he just went right by that plantation. And so there was just some little quizzical kinds of things that he did. And white folks were a part of that, the poor whites. But the slave master, no.
Yeah.
And, I mean, these kids, children, knew Nat. I mean, they loved him, too. So they were running up to the to Nat Turner's men with their arms wide open. And they were dispatched.
They were killed.
Killed.
Yeah.
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 So he killed everybody he took, he knew. That's saying something. That's like me going and dealing with people that I've grown up with, but dispatching them for the purposes of God, you know? Because why would he take a child's life? They grow up to be a slave master.
The legacy of Nat Turner. Some, you know, there's interesting debate about it as to what he did, because slavery was so abominable and as horrible as it could be, if it was justified, what Nat Turner did.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that's still open. We're close to 15 years shy of 200 years, yeah. And we still don't see the legacy.
The conversation hasn't ended. I mean, you mentioned from the day that he went to farm to farm,
yeah.
Or plantation to plantation, and he'd free the slaves who were there, says you're free. Not all of them went with him.
No, and that's why he is a folk hero. I will say that. People who know something about Nat Turner said he was a bad guy, but he was doing right by God. That is, he should not have taken the life, but then on the other side, he had to do what he had to do. And so he's a folk hero as a result of that. You're going to put that on the silver screen? You're going to put that on a stage? Do you know that he killed white people? How are you going to handle that? I said, you ought to see the scene when the heads are on the poles. If you got a problem with the blade coming down, you ought to see the rebellion being reenacted on stage. You know, it's quite something to see. But what I think will happen is because Nat has more of this messianic, spiritual grounding, and you don't want to mess with that as a human being because you don't know what God's work is. And this rebellion happened, and if Nat is true to his God, then the legacy of Nat Turner will be similar to, it's just like the Malcolm X today. What is Malcolm's legacy? He's trying to help black folk, but black folk are the one that took him out. Dr. King tried to help white folk. White folk, the one took him out. Nat Turner's trying to free all the slaves. Yeah, and he's a hero as a result of it because he struck a blow for freedom. And so his legacy will be speaking power to authority. They'll tell you that Nat was crazed, that he was a fanatic, a miscreant. I mean, some of the terms used in the newspapers of that time are pretty bad. And so if that's the only storyline that you're getting, somebody needs to rewrite the story. I'm not saying to revise the story, a revisionist. No, we're just talking about here are some other factors that white Southerners who wrote about this didn't include. And that is the point of view from the slave. So once we get the point of view from the slave's mindset, then we can see the legacy result from that.
Michael Lange,
mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much.